Save big money on your kitchen project at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free design estimates today. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money
at Menards. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You have an uneasy feeling in the darkness. It's there, but you can't see it. Why is this room so cold? You're home alone. You hear footsteps, whispers, or even laughter. You feel a presence. Is someone or something watching you? And the fear sets in. I'm K-Town, and you're listening to Paranormal Fears. Now here's part two.
So I remember calling my husband and father-in-law, and they came upstairs, and we all stood there and looked at the mirror, and never in my mind did I fathom that something had the ability to communicate on a mirror, with soap. I just never heard of it. I didn't think it could happen. So I thought, okay, which one of you is doing this? I remember saying to my husband, are you playing a joke? Or what's going on? And everyone said, we didn't have anything to do with it. My husband, father-in-law, none of us did. So we said, well, we'll see. So I erased it. We left the room. And I remember saying, all right, if you're still there, write again. We waited a couple minutes. We went back into the room and there was writing on the mirror. So we proved to ourselves, the four of us, that one of us wasn't doing it. No one was getting into the house doing it. The presence in the house was writing on the mirror.
When it started writing on the mirrors, because clearly, you know, whatever this is, it followed you to your new home. Did you seek help at that time?
No, not quite yet.
All right.
It at first pretended to be my mother-in-law's dead sister. It would write things that it was my mother-in-law's dead sister. So my mother-in-law actually started to believe that she was communicating with her dead sister. It started to call her a name that only my mother-in-law knew. It was Nini. And this was a name that her sister had called her when she was like 5, 6, 7 years old. Nobody else knew it. So my mother-in-law said, no, nobody else knows that name but my sister. It's got to be my sister. But the entity would start writing very strange things. Like it would say to us, don't go into the attic. On this house, you go up the steps to the second floor. On the left-hand side, or at the top, there's a door that leads into an attic. And it would say, don't go into the attic. There's danger there. Don't go into there. There's a bad wire. It can cause fire. And I remember we talked to my husband. I'd say, well, if this is her sister communicating with her, why wouldn't she be saying, get the wire fixed? She's saying, stay out of there. It was almost like it didn't want us to go into this area of the house. So I said to I remember telling my mother-in-law, we have to find someone to help us. We have to know what's going on, you know. This could be dangerous. Finally, my mother-in-law started to admit it wasn't her sister. When we confronted the entity in the mirror, because the way you could talk to the entity was you went to the mirror and you talked. Now, it wouldn't write right in front of you. You had to leave the room. And you'd come back and it would answer your question. And when we started confronting it, saying, you're not her sister. We know you're not her sister. Who are you? And then it started to get hostile. And it said, I said, what do we call you? Well, who are you? And he said, I am Prince. I am to be called Prince.
Now, what was your
husband's state of mind during this
time? He wouldn't have anything to do with it. He wouldn't, if was writing on the mirror, he didn't want to look at it. He didn't want to see it. He was frightened of it. So was my mother-in-law. My father-in-law was like indifferent to everything. It was like it didn't matter to him. He was like in his own little world. Oh, yeah, who cares? Even though these amazing things were happening, he wanted to just kind of ignore it, too.
So he had no reaction, negative or positive?
No, he had a very strange reaction in that there was barely any reaction. You know, it was almost like it didn't matter.
Wow.
So I remember saying to my mother-in-law, we have to get help. This can't be. I mean, this is getting worse and worse. Because she did, it was like, don't tell anybody what's going on. Don't say anything. They're going to think we're crazy. They're nuts. Nobody can help us. I'll keep. So she would pray and pray for God to help her. So finally she went to a church and asked a priest to come. She said, if a priest comes, he can bless the house and anything in the house will leave. So that was our first attempt to try to get rid of Mr. Entity. The priest came. He was an older gentleman. Came in the front door into the foyer. Never left that spot. He's supposed to go through every room of the house and bless it with holy water and say a prayer. He wouldn't leave the hall. He did a cross, the sign of the cross in the hall. He said, okay, this house is blessed. I've got to go.
So you're saying that he probably sensed something very, very evil in the house.
He must have. And I remember my mother-in-law started to cry, and she tried to explain to him what was going on because she was desperate at this time. And he said, no, it's you're just imagining this. And he turned to me and said, women, when they get this age, they get a little crazy. He made the crazy sign with his finger on her by your ear. And he said, I've got to go. And he literally ran to his car and took away and drove off. And I remember my mother-in-law was so upset because she thought that the priest was going to help, and he just ran away.
How very sad. It's very interesting that you say your mother-in-law was extremely religious, because I've heard experts say that these types of things happen to people that are very, very religious.
Yeah, she was a very devout Catholic. She didn't go to church. She didn't go to church because when her mother died, she used to go to church with her mother. She stopped going to church, but she didn't stop believing in God or praying. I mean, every night she prayed, said the rosary. She was a very religious lady. But she was also very frightened. She thought, as long as I keep praying, God will protect me. And like I said to her, God helps those who help themselves. We got to find somebody who knows about this who can help us. So at that point, our quest began to find someone to help us.
Now, I know you said you were not scared at the beginning, but I'm wanting to, because most of the time when people just have to see other people scared and then they get scared. So at this point, when you clearly know this thing has followed you and it's writing with soap on the mirrors now, are you starting to get frightened? Because you were pregnant or you had already had your child at this time?
Yeah, I just had a child. Had Jamie, our first son. No, I don't understand why. First of all, at the beginning, it fascinated me. It was like my mind had to understand what was going on. I wasn't frightened of it. It was just something different. By the time it started to get hostile towards my family, I became like in a different mode. I wasn't frightened a bit. For some reason, I knew it could not harm me. I just knew this cannot harm me, but it can hurt my mother-in-law. I know. So I became, instead of becoming frightened, I became protective. My husband had a bad heart. He couldn't protect. My father-in-law just didn't care. My mother-in-law was scared to death. There was only one person to protect the family, and that was me. So instead of becoming frightened, I became almost stronger because it was like I had to be the one that took care of them. So you go into, it's like you don't have a choice. You can't say, oh, I'm going to be frightened. It's like, I can't be frightened. I got to take care of them.
That's right. You're one of the bravest women I've ever talked to, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
Honestly.
It was more of necessity.
I commend you. Honestly do. Now, the entity started to focus on your mother-in-law, correct?
Yes, it made her life a living hell. And it also devastated the family in that it separated us from society. We became isolated. It separated us. It's like divide and conquer. It wanted us so that we were away from people, so we didn't have a support system. It was just the four of us, with five with Jamie. And Mr. Entity was almost like our captive, our captor. We were the captives. He would do things if we tried to go to a friend's house. I remember one time we went to my mother-in-law's friend's house to take her out so she could see people. When we were there, when we came home, it had taken the gentleman's wallet where we just were and put it on. We came home, it was sitting on our kitchen table. Now, how are we going to go back to this friend's house and say, first, because she wouldn't let us tell them that we had something going on in the house. Well, by the way, we have your wallet. It would do things like that so that it would make us so uncomfortable to be around people, we couldn't be around people. If we went to a restaurant, when we came home, the name tag of the person who had waited on us would be sitting on the kitchen table. It wanted us to know that no matter where we went, he was with us.
Okay, wait. You went out to a restaurant, and whoever was waiting on you, it took their name tag, and
yes,
it was...
this happened many times. It wasn't once. Every time we went out to dinner, because my mother-in-law and father loved to go out to dinner, we would go out to dinner. When we came home, the name tag of the person who waited on us would be sitting on our kitchen table. One time we went out for pizza, and we came home, and the little spatulas that you take to get pieces of pizza, there was two of them sitting on our kitchen table. It was like his way of showing us that no matter where we went, he was with us.
Unbelievable, honestly. I'm speechless. Now, let's go back to reaching out and trying to get help. Now, was this a preacher? Or somebody
this
from
is a priest.
Okay, a priest. Okay,
Catholic priest.
Catholic priest. Okay, so he wasn't there, but how long? A few minutes?
Probably 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. So, obviously, he was not equipped to deal with this type of haunting, and he definitely felt that something was there. What did you do after that? What was your next step or your next course of action?
The next step is there was no place, where can you go to turn to find people that work in the paranormal? It's not in the phone book at that time. This is 87. Paranormal research. That thing just didn't exist at that time that we knew of. So we started going to psychic fairs, paranormal bookstores, occult bookstores, places like that to try to find people that knew about this that could help us. We also tried the university. We contacted Thelma Moss, and she sent out a Terry Gaynor, a researcher, to come to the house. That was one. We actually even had the Warrens here. Ed and Lorraine Warren came.
Now, what I'm interested, anything happened while they were there?
It did. They came, they stayed like 3 days. Let me tell you a few things that happened up until Warrens came.
Sure, go ahead. Go right
one
ahead.
One of the things that happened is another thing that is like mind-boggling to me. Mr. Entity, like you said, started to focus his hostility towards my mother-in-law. Now, this is when all during the time we're trying to find people to help us. This was going on because you don't find people every day to help you. It was like months in between, and all these things would happen in between. He started focusing his hostility on my mother-in-law. He made her life living hell. She couldn't have a wallet. He would take her wallet, and then he would destroy her money, her credit cards. Everything that made her have her life, he would take away from her. It got to the point where everything that she wanted, she had to give to me because Mr. Entity would not touch anything that was near me, or if I had it and said, this is mine, he wouldn't touch it. So she would have to give her things to me, and if it was near me, he couldn't touch it. So I had her wallet, all the things that meant something to her. But her clothes, he would destroy. She'd go to put a pair of pants on, and he would cut off one of the legs, so she only had one leg and a pair of pants. Or her pajamas, he just cut them up into little pieces. He destroyed her clothes. He would take shoes, so she'd only have one shoe, so she wouldn't have a pair of shoe. I mean, he was destroying, literally, if it wasn't for my mother's deep belief in God and her faith in God that everything was going to be all right, she would have probably went nuts, because it was unmerciful. I mean, it was constant. It then got to the point where he became physical against her. If she was sitting near me on the couch, she was fine. If I left or she left, she was vulnerable. I remember going to the bathroom one time. This is one of the times I actually saw something moving in the air. I came back in, and as I came in, I see a potato, a raw potato, being thrown across the room, hitting my mother-in-law right in the head. He started to put knives in her chair or where she would sit.
Oh, wow.
We got to the point where we'd have to go, and wherever my mother-in-law was going to sit down before she would sit, we used to have to check for knives because he'd take the knives and put them underneath so that if she sat down, she'd sit on the knife. It was constant. She had to be constantly monitored, constantly protected. I'll take a look at how I started calling him Mr. Entity. We were watching television. She said she had to get paper towels. We have a little pantry off the kitchen. She went into the pantry to get the paper towels. Mr. Entity shut the door and locked her in and turned the light off, and we heard her scream. And we all jumped up and ran to the door. It was when we first, I remember thinking, why doesn't she just open the door and come out? But to her, the door was locked, but it wasn't locked. I mean, you could open the door, but she couldn't open it from the inside. But when we got in there, she told us Mr. Entity had shut the light off and grabbed her by the throat. And she actually had the bruises on her throat, on her neck. You could see where someone tried to grab her. And I remember I became so upset because you get so frustrated because how do you fight something you can't see? You can't see it. We don't have weapons that you know. I mean, you can't fight it. So I remember becoming so frustrated. I went into the mirror. Well, during this time, my mother-in-law and father-in-law had moved out of the upstairs, and we had all moved together into the back master bedroom because that's the only place my mother-in-law felt safe. Because we did this, nobody was upstairs to read the upstairs mirror, so Mr. Entity started to write on the downstairs guest bathroom mirror. So now he would write on that mirror. I remember going into the bathroom, and I said to him, I just told him, Mr. Entity, you will not hurt my child. You will not hurt my husband, and you will not hurt Lee. And you are going to treat me with respect, and I will treat you with respect, and I'll accept nothing else. And I remember I left the bathroom, and I waited, and I went in, and he wrote on the mirror, I will not hurt the child, I will not touch your husband, but Lee belongs to me.
Wow.
And I went in again and asked him why. Why does Lee belong to you? Why do you have the right to touch Lee? And he told me, he wrote out, now when I say he told me, he didn't speak to me, but he wrote it out on the mirror. He would write, I would erase, go back out, come in. He told me a whole story, how that long, long ago, I think it was like back in the 16th century, Lee had been promised to him in a blood ritual, and the blood ritual had never taken place. But just because it didn't take place didn't mean that Lee wasn't promised to him. And Lee belonged to him, and he had come to claim her.
This is truly unbelievable. Unbelievable. What was your husband's state of mind? Did he know that all this was happening?
He knew everything was happening. He kept thinking, we have to find someone to help us. So he was trying to find someone, desperately trying to find somebody to help us.
Okay, and you were still interacting with Mr. Entity, right?
Right. Mr. Entity literally destroyed our house. He would go to the walls, and it was like he would take something sharp, and he would gouge in the wall symbols. Now, his symbol was, which we came to learn, the triangle with the tail at the bottom. That was his symbol. He cut it out in all the rugs in the house. He wrote it on the walls. He gouged it in the walls. Then he did other kinds of symbols all over the house. So every day it was get up, make sure Ma's okay, start repairing the house. My father-in-law and I would start repairing the house for the day. It was constant. It was just constant destruction. But I found that if I talked to Mr. Entity, if I went in and talked to Mr. Entity, that's how, like when I told him I would treat him with respect, I wouldn't call him Prince. Because for some reason, I felt that calling him Prince was giving him, like, power over me, making me call him Prince. I wasn't going to do that. So I said, I will treat you with respect. I'll call you, instead of it or entity, I'll call you Mr. Entity. That's how I started calling him Mr. Entity. So I would go in and I'd say, Mr. Entity, you have to stop destroying the house. And he wouldn't answer. But I noticed that if I talked to him and asked him questions and he would answer me, he would use like a lot of his energy to speak on the mirror instead of destroying the house. So that's how our conversation started evolving, was more towards a method of keeping him from destroying the house and hurting my mother-in-law. Like I said, I would talk to it. It wouldn't do as much destruction. We were still looking high and low for someone to help us. We found the Warrens. I found a book in the library about the Warrens, contacted the Warrens. They were going to be coming out to California for some convention or something. So they said they'd come and spend a few days around this area to help us. The Warrens were very nice, especially Ed, a very nice man. Before they came, like two nights before they came or a night before they came, this is another really strange thing that happened. We were sitting watching television together because we always stayed together because together we felt safe. All of a sudden, I get up to go to the kitchen and there's water on the floor in the kitchen and I hear water running. And I go towards the stairwell and coming down the stairs like a waterfall you see out in the mountains, a beautiful waterfall. Uh-huh. Coming down the stairs from, and I remember counting because I said, where is this water coming from? The third stair down, water was pouring out. It was coming down, cascading down the steps like a waterfall, flooding the house. And I remember calling for help and they got up. And I remember I ran into, because I knew Mr. Entity was doing it. And I ran into the bathroom and I said, Mr. Entity, stop this. You have to stop it. And it was just like, I ran back out and it was just like someone flipped the switch. It just turned off. Everything was still flooded. There was water everywhere, but the water stopped coming out of the stairs. But my father-in-law said, oh, it must be a pipe broke. Or, you know, looking again, even though you have an entity, for an explanation, because your brain constantly looks for a rational explanation no matter what happens. There was no broken pipe. There was no way water could come out of that step, but it was.
Unbelievable. I'm curious to know how often, okay, so your mother-in-law was suffering these attacks, the pants to be cut off, the shoes would be gone, money gone, knives in her seat. How often or what's the frequency? Like, is it several incidents a day, some every week?
This wasn't like, you know, like you've watched some of these things, the paranormal shows that happen once a week, once a month. This was from the time we got up to the time we went to bed. It was talking to the entity, calming the entity, fixing what he did, protecting my mother-in-law. And then there'd be a few days. For some reason, Christmas time, all the time he was here, it was like the week or 2 weeks around Christmas, completely nothing. Nothing would happen.
Wow.
I don't know. My husband used to joke and say he went on Christmas vacation, but it was like everything just stopped for a couple of weeks. And then after Christmas, he'd come right back.
Unbelievable. Let's pick it up to where the Warrens, you finally made contact with them and you're hoping to see some relief from this entity that's just been terrorizing your family. At this point, how many years have passed?
Let's see. This was 87, 88, I think 2 years.
All right. So what happened?
2 years into it.
2 years into it. Okay. So what happened after you contacted the Warrens and they got there?
They graciously said they would come out and help. So they came here. I remember they came. It was towards the evening when they came to the house. I remember they were coming down. We had, at this time, we had a gentleman staying with us. His name was Gary. I don't want to give his last name. A famous person in the paranormal, Brian Hurst, who was a wonderful man. He was very well known around Hollywood as a psychic and a medium. Tried to help us. He couldn't help us, but he tried. And he knew Gary, who was a researcher, a book writer and a researcher. And he said, told Gary, you know, you have to come and document what's going on. So at this time, Gary was staying with us. And it was a way, it was good Gary was here, because not only was it the four of us seeing what was going on, but we had another person, Gary, who could vouch that these things were happening. So he was here at the time. The Warrens came in. I remember Lorraine Warren walking down our hall. And as she was walking down the hall, we had a large toy box on the side. And it was pushed right out in front of her, like to trip her. I remember seeing that. I remember that because, like I said, very few things happened in front of your eyes. So the things that did happen, I remember distinctly. And I remember her commenting on it, and I remember we pushed it back, and they all came and sat around the kitchen table, and we explained what was going on. They were, like I said, they were very nice people, especially Ed. You could just listen to Ed for hours. He would tell stories. He was just very personable.
Now, what was their initial reaction to your story?
She said she would find out what was going on when she got here. We came and sat at the kitchen table. Lorraine excused herself. She said, "I'm going to go around the house and see what's going on, and I'll be back." So she walked all through the house. She went upstairs where Mr. Entity, it was like Mr. Entity took over the upstairs. You could start going up the steps, and when you got to a certain height on the steps, you got this feeling like a dark blanket being put around you. It was like the upstairs became his domain. We didn't even go upstairs. The upstairs of the house just was empty. No one lived there. So she went through the whole house, and she came back to the table. We were all sitting there, and she said to Ed, "This is one of the worst entities I have ever come in contact with." She said, "It's a demon." She said, "But it's not just a regular demon." She said, "This is one of the most powerful ancient demons I've ever come across." She said, "It's bad, Ed." And, well, my mother-in-law was very happy that, you know, they were here to help us. But when I remember my mother-in-law's face when she heard this, because no one before had ever said to us, "You have a demon in your house." Lorraine was the first one that said that. And I remember the color just draining from my mother-in-law's face. She became so frightened and so upset. And the next day they came. They didn't stay in our house. They wouldn't stay in the house. They stayed in the hotel. We put them up in a hotel. And the next day they came, and I remember they had a friend with them. And he was a videotaper. He videotaped everything. And I remember they took each one of us into the dining room. We each sat down, and they interviewed each of us separately. And then Ed told me, "Well, I'm going to come back this evening, and I'm going to do the rite of provocation." So they came back that evening, and I remember my mother-in-law and the baby stayed in the kitchen together. And in the living room, that's where we held it, was Gary, my husband. They sat on a love seat. I sat next to my father-in-law on a couch. And then this was like a semicircle. And on the other side were two chairs with Ed and Lorraine. And then towards the middle was this gentleman who videotaped everything. And Ed started the rite of provocation. I can't remember words or anything, but he started saying these words. And my father-in-law started to change. And I don't mean, you know, I would literally look at somebody and they change into a monster or anything. It wasn't like that. It was subtle changes. The way he held himself, the look in his face. His voice was still my father-in-law's voice, but it had a different timbre to it. It was different. And I remember looking at him and thinking, how strange, what's going on? And Ed had a sliver of wood, and he told me it was a piece of the cross. It was a holy relic, and he held that. And my father-in-law stood up. And when my father-in-law stood up, he was shaped different. His back was curled, and his one arm was drawn up to his chest, like a person who had a stroke. You know how they have, like, kind of hold their chest?
Yes.
And his head was bowed, and he started to walk towards Ed Warren, and he said to Ed Warren, asked him what he was doing here. And he growled, and Ed Warren picked up the little piece of Holy Cross, and he held it up to my father-in-law and said, "You can't hurt me. I have this." And I remember my father-in-law looking at him and said, "I'm going to bite that and bite your hand off and chew it up and spit it in your face." And I remember Ed just looked at him and started saying a prayer and held that up. And my father-in-law slowly turned around and went back and sat on the couch and went slowly back to himself.
Wow. What were you thinking at? Were you frightened at this point? You had to be frightened at this point.
I was frightened because there was like a feeling in the room of like, I don't know how to put it, almost like a vacuum feeling. You know, it was like that. It was just a strange feeling. And to see my father-in-law change.
Right, and it because was like, he had no reaction one way or the other, right?
Right. Ever. Right. It was like he was disassociated with it. It was like it was happening, but he really didn't care. Because he, you know, the relationship between him and my mother-in-law was not a good relationship, you know? They had been together for so long, but I had the feeling my father-in-law really didn't even like my mother-in-law. So he wasn't there to protect her. He was there just for himself to survive. So for him, this to go into him and to manifest, it was like, it was very strange. And to see it actually happening and to have that feeling of knowing there's something unworldly, unearthly right next to you, it was really strange.
We're at the point where you've finally, hopefully, have some relief. You've gotten in contact with Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are assessing your situation, and now they are trying to help you get this thing out of your home. And now your father-in-law has started to change, and in a frightening way. You can pick it up from there.
When that happened, he stopped the rite of provocation. I remember him telling us, "We'll be back tomorrow to talk about this." And they left. They went back to their hotel. And my father-in-law didn't even know what happened. He didn't realize what had happened. So we explained to him what had happened. And it was like, he was amazed at it, but it didn't seem to bother him that much. It didn't frighten him or anything. So this is another strange thing that happened, which they left. They went to the hotel. That night, when we went to bed, my at this point, it got to the point my husband couldn't sleep at night. He would stay up all night and sleep in the early morning hours because he was so frightened. The thing he was frightened of, he used to dream constantly of this entity pretending to be his dead grandmother, and that he would walk down the hall and his dead grandmother would be standing at the end of the hall and saying hello to him, and then turning into the entity. So he just couldn't sleep at night. So we got in the habit of staying up because he wouldn't leave the room without me. He wouldn't go to the kitchen anywhere without me. So I'd have to be up with him. So in the middle of the night, my father-in-law gets up. The master bedroom is a very large room, and then it has a sitting room off it. So we had our bed in the sitting room. They were in the master bedroom. And my father-in-law has to walk past us to go to the bathroom in there. And as he walks past us, he's in the same shape as he was when the entity took over his body. He's curled up, his arms curled to his chest, and he walks by us and goes to the bathroom. And so that was really unsettling because it was like the entity was in him again.
Wow. That is chilling, 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 honestly. All right. So what happens after that? After you see that, do you contact Ed and Lorraine again? I mean, what happens?
It was the middle of the night, so we didn't call. Bill wanted me to call them. I said, "Why? They can't rush back over and do anything." So we waited till the next morning. They came back over. They discussed everything that was going on. She again reiterated that she thought it was a very, very powerful ancient deity or demon, and they didn't have the power to get rid of it. They weren't affiliated with any priests out here. Their affiliations are back east. So she couldn't even have a priest come to, you know, do an exorcism. But they did arrange. They had a friend, I think his name was Chuck Moses in Los Angeles, for us to see a priest in Los Angeles who was to come to the house and do an exorcism. We went to the church. We talked to him. The Warrens were with us. He agreed to come that Sunday. This was like Friday. He agreed to come that Sunday to do an exorcism. And the strange thing that happened that day, when the priest came to, he knocked on the, he was actually Episcopalian, knocked on the door. He wasn't a Catholic. To do the, my father-in-law talked my mother-in-law out of letting him in. He told her if she let an Episcopalian into her house to do an exorcism, she'd be excommunicated from the church. She couldn't let him in to do an exorcism. So my husband and I didn't have anything to say about it because they didn't want him to come in to do the exorcism. So we didn't allow him to come in the house to do the exorcism. So the Warrens said they were sorry. There was nothing more they could do for us. And they wished us well. And they were very kind. I don't have anything nasty to say about the Warrens because they were very nice. But then our quest continued, like I said, to find more people. We contacted two shamans that came to the house. We talked to them, explained what was going on. They came to the house to try to help us. They needed to go. They said they had to go upstairs, and they asked me to come with them. So I went upstairs with them. There was a female and a male, very nice people. They had, I remember, shells and feathers, and they were burning incense going through the rooms chanting. And they opened the door to the attic because I explained to them how Mr. Entity didn't want us going into the attic. And I was standing there with them. And as they would blow the incense smoke into the attic, you could see the incense, a lot of incense being blown into the attic. A second later, it was like someone blew from the other side and would blow the incense back out. It was like they'd blow it in, he'd blow it out. Finally, they said, we have to go in there and confront him. So I remember standing in the doorway, and they were in the attic. And inside the attic on the walls is like a pink insulation. And the gentleman did some type of chanting. He said, I'm going to make him show himself. So he did the chanting. And as I stood there and watched, the insulation that was on the walls started to come off and formed itself into a huge head. Now, it didn't form the body. It was just this huge head, like a 5-foot head on the side of the wall. I remember looking at it. I only could see the side view of the head. I couldn't see the front. That's where he was standing in front of it. But the side view was this huge head. And I remember it had a really, it wasn't grotesque. It wasn't like a monster, but it was like it had this huge jaw, a big, strong nose. And on the side of its head was a horn. And the horn is where the ear was. And it just like made a circle and then came up over the top of the head and went over the head into the horn. And I remember looking at it, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I just stood there staring at it. And then it slowly just dissipated and fell to the ground.
Wow. And were you the only one that saw this?
The two Indians saw it also, two Native Americans.
What was their reaction?
I remember then we came out, and she said to me, we didn't realize how strong an entity this is. She said, you saw it, we saw it. She said, but you don't realize what a strong entity this is or what it is. She said, we can't help you. We can't get rid of it. She said, it's too strong. And then she did something, which if they had asked me beforehand, I would have said, no, don't do it. For some reason, we had a dog. Our dog came upstairs right after this happened. And the dog went over and was talking. The dog was talking. The dog went over to the male medicine man who was standing there. And while the lady spoke to me, he was with the dog. And then I remember we all went downstairs and they were leaving. And she took me aside and she said, we can help you. I told you that. But we were able to put the demon into the dog to give you a little time to try to find someone to help you. She said, I don't know how long it'll last, how long he'll stay in there, or what will happen. And I remember saying, well, why did you do that? First of all, going through everything I had just gone through, your mind opens up to things you don't think that can happen that now you're more open to. The thought of someone saying they put a demon into a dog at one time, I would have said, yeah, sure, right. But after everything I had witnessed and experienced, someone told me that, now I'm more open-minded to it. So I remember saying, why did you do that? I don't want this dog to be injured. And I remember she said, the dog gave us permission. And they left. And from that time until the dog died, which was a few weeks later, everything stopped.
Now,
nothing happened.
Was anything wrong with the dog
stopped.
Prior? Was anything wrong with the dog prior?
No, nothing. This entity loved water. He loved water. He used to, everything he would, like, people would come and, I remember a lady that practiced different kinds of magical rituals. She left candles and things, and she's left them burning. Mr. Entity would throw them in the swimming pool. So the bottom of the swimming pool would be covered with everything that religious symbols, everything would be in the bottom of the swimming pool. He just liked water. He'd put water everywhere. So the dog died of lymphangiectasia, which is a very rare disease where the dog filled up with water and drowned on his own body fluid. Now, he had no problems before this happened. Was it a coincidence that he died 2 weeks later and during this time nothing had happened? Or was this real? I don't know. I don't know the demon was in him, but I do know that the dog died. And when the dog died, everything started to happen again.
All right. So they told you that the dog said or gave them permission to.
Yes.
Okay. To allow this to happen.
Yes.
All right. So after that, everything stopped, correct?
Right.
Okay. Then the dog dies 2 weeks later.
I don't know the exact time how long he died, 2 weeks,
okay.
A month, but I do know during the time everything was quiet.
So after the dog died, things started to pick up again?
Right.
Okay.
Right back where we were to begin with. We talked to another lady who was Evelyn Paglini. This lady was supposed to be an extremely powerful woman. As a matter of fact, she was very well known.
Powerful
she
in which
tried
way?
To come and help us.
What do you mean by powerful? What do you mean by that?
From what we understand, she was a very powerful magician.
Okay.
She did different spells, helped people. She, from her reputation, she was able to clear houses of entities.
Was she involved in Wicca?
I would think she was a Wiccan, yeah.
Okay, go right ahead.
Okay. The entity absolutely hated Dr. Paglini. Would call her all kinds of names, filthy names on the mirror. Just hated her. But during the time when she was here, she said, this entity is so powerful, I can't get rid of it. She said, I just have no say. She said, one of the problems is someone in the house is giving it permission to stay. And
wow.
She said, if something has permission to stay in your house, nobody can get rid of it.
Who do you think that was?
Well, I knew it wasn't me, and I knew it wasn't my husband and mother-in-law. So the only one I suspected was my father-in-law. And she said, do you know who it is? I said, no, I don't. I have my suspicions, but I don't know. She said, well, I'll find out. She said, I'm going to do something tomorrow morning. You'll be able to tell me what happens, and I'll tell you who is keeping the demon in your house. The next during the night, my father-in-law wakes up about 3 o'clock and has this coughing fit. I mean, it was so bad we were going to call the ambulance. And it's just as quick as it came, it stopped, and he laid right back down and went to sleep. It was like nothing happened. And I told Dr. Paglini this the next day, and she said, he's the one he's allowing the demon to stay in your house. He's giving it permission. So that was that. Then 2 or 3 days later, like I said, we all slept in this bedroom together. My father-in-law jumps up in bed with a start, like a yelp. And I remember getting out of bed and running over saying, what's the matter? And he pulled out from under this is amazing. He pulled out from under the blanket a spearhead. And it's about 18 inches long, and it's made of metal, and it's handmade, and it's ice cold, and it's dangerous looking. And he said, where did this come from? And I remember thinking, oh, goodness, I got to get this away from him. So I remember I took it. And I went in to Mr. Entity in the mirror, and I said, did you bring this, Mr. Entity? And he said, yes. I want him to perform a blood ritual on Lena. And I said, I remember looking at the mirror, and I told him, no one's going to perform any blood ritual. You're not having a blood ritual. And this is now my spear. And he got so upset, he blew out all the windows in the top floor of the house. But I kept the spear. I still have the spear. It's in a safe place, so he doesn't get it back.
Was she in the home when this happened?
Yes, she was right in bed with him.
Unbelievable.
And we took the spear the next day to the museum to see what it was. And we were told it was a spearhead from the Belgian Congo area. It was over 200 years old. And the gentleman told me, this isn't a spearhead that's used for war, and it's not one that's used for hunting. He said, it's not sharpened. The sides aren't sharpened for this type of, to use it that way. He said, that's at the top is pointed. He said, this is a spearhead that would have been used by a shaman or a medicine man in ritual magic. So that's what it was. And it was like over 200 years old. It's all handmade. And it's just an amazing port. And they couldn't believe it. They said, this looks like it's brand new. Where did you get it? And I said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. So that is the most amazing thing. With all the pictures, I kept that. And it's the most amazing piece. You have to see it to believe it.
Now, I want to ask you about your father-in-law. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you guys thought at that point that he was the one saying, you can stay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you ever have the conversation with him, ask him why or what his thoughts were?
Yes.
He seemed pretty quiet about everything.
We would confront him with it. Are you keeping it here? Do you want it here? No, I don't want anything to do with this. No. And then something strange happened. I was usually the only one that went into the guest bathroom to talk to Mr. Entity. Everybody else was frightened to. I noticed him sneaking into the bathroom. And I just kind of backed off. And then I noticed, now when I went by the bathroom, the mirror was always full of writing because Mr. Entity was constantly communicating. And I went in and the mirror was clean. And then I went in a little while later and Mr. Entity wrote, he's the one that wipes the mirror. And then Mr. Entity explained to me how he would come in and ask Mr. Entity to hurt my mother-in-law because he wanted her dead. He would actually ask him, and Mr. Entity would tell me this. He comes in and asks me to hurt her.
Wow.
So we find it. My mother-in-law was a type of woman that was her husband. She was Italian. She believed you didn't get divorced. You stayed with him. You went through thick or thin with him. We tried to convince her, you got to get rid of your husband. That we're never going to get rid of Mr. Entity if you don't force your husband to leave. Finally, I went to different psychiatrists because she thought maybe he had a mental problem. He could get rid of all this. Nothing worked. He even received a certificate saying he was sound mentally. But so finally, though, she told me he had to leave. Now, this is when we really got rid of Mr. Entity. Even though he left, he was gone for, Mr. Entity still stayed in the house. But even though Mr. Entity was still violent, he communicated even more and hurt her even less. It was like there was a change. Once he was gone, Mr. Entity communicated more, and he wasn't as destructive. He would say nasty things like Lee die and this and that, but he was more communicating. Gary Williams, this is how we got Mr. Entity left. This was like a year later. My father-in-law had been gone, but Mr. Entity was still there doing what he did. Gary moved back in with us to keep investigating. Now, Gary was kind of strange, and he was a very unhappy man. And he said to me, because he realized how powerful Mr. Entity was, he said, do you think if I offered Mr. Entity to come with me, to be with me, that he can help me with my life? And I remember saying, Gary, don't even think of such a thing. You don't want to get involved with Mr. Entity. But he said, I have no life. It's better than no life. So he actually went into Mr. Entity, and he told Mr. Entity he was leaving and going to England. Mr. Entity could come with him and be part of his life.
Oh, no.
And I remember I went into Mr. Entity and I said, Mr. Entity, you can't stay here now. You can't stay here. Dad's gone. You have no permission to be here. My mother, my kids, and we all love each other. There's only going to be love in this house. You're not going to get fed. So it's time for you to leave. And I remember him saying, I don't want to go. Don't make me go. I said, you have to go. And I said, Gary said you can go with him. He said, I won't go with Gary. He's an empty vessel. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, he has no integrity. He has no word. He has no honor. And then I'm thinking, why, you know, to now stop and think, here's this entity, this Mr. Entity, a demon who does these horrible things, yet he doesn't want to go with a man who has no honor or integrity. That I didn't understand this part. I mean, why would a demon not want to go with someone like Gary? But he didn't want to go with him because he said he was an empty vessel. So I said, well, you don't have a choice. It's time for you to go. You have to go now, Mr. Entity. And Mr. Entity, when Gary was leaving the day, I went in and I said, you have to go now, Mr. Entity. And the last thing that Mr. Entity wrote on the mirror was, goodbye, my family. And he left with Gary and he's never been back.
Unbelievable. I'm speechless, honestly. I want to know, have you heard from Gary since then? Or what happened with Gary?
Yeah, I kept in contact with Gary. I felt sorry for Gary. Gary actually was a good friend at the time. He tried to help us and everything he could do. He just had problems. He said he didn't want to talk about Mr. Entity, but I remember he told me at first when he went to his apartment, when he moved, that he started finding the triangles with the tail. And then everything, Gary stopped talking about Mr. Entity. He wouldn't talk about him anymore. And then Gary ran into a lot of different problems and everything. And Gary has a lot of problems even now. He works in the paranormal field saying he's a psychic now. And he has a lot of problems. So I don't, is Mr. Entity with him? I don't think so. Because I don't think, as bad as Mr. Entity was, he didn't want to be associated with Gary for some reason. But he did leave here. What Mr. Entity was, I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever know what he was. Was he a demon? Was he, one person that came thought he was a djinn. I don't know what he was. I just know that for 6 years, he was part of our life. I mean, it was like we lived in the Twilight Zone. It was the most terrifying yet the most amazing thing that ever happened. It was just, and it's just absolutely amazing.
So you never found any type of connection with your family, per se, with this thing, this entity?
No.
Okay.
No. But Mr. Entity would not. Mr. Entity started bringing me gifts. When Dad left and I was telling Mr. Entity, you have to go. He started bringing me gifts. He would bring me, I remember we went to some place and there was a beautiful, I love stones. For some reason, I love rocks and stones. Just rocks, regular old rocks on the ground. I just love rocks. And he would bring me rocks from all over and leave me presents and jewelry. And different kinds of things. He would leave me presents all the time.
Would you keep those things?
Do you know what? I put everything, a lot of things in a box, and I just put them away in the attic because I didn't want anything to do with them. And like I said, when he left, we decided we wouldn't bring him up. We wouldn't talk about him because my mother-in-law was so frightened that he would come back. So I put in the box, that's why I have the spear saved. I have some of the apports. He gave me a real old bell. There was some jewelry. I mean, I kept everything in a box, some rocks. So I have the apport still. And the pictures. There's like over 300 pictures of the demon writing, if he was a demon. But the writing is, and here's one thing that to me is the most fascinating thing. I have a few pictures. Now, every time he wrote, he would write on the mirror in the bathroom. And in the mirror, you can see when you look in the pictures, you can see in the reflection of the mirrors, you can see the bathroom. In three different pictures, I took a picture in the bathroom of the bathroom mirror, but the reflection you're seeing is of the kitchen. It's not the same room that the mirror was in.
This is just mind-boggling, honestly. I've never heard of anything like this. This is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I encourage anybody to look at the pictures.
You know, they can go to the website, A Deadly Haunting.
Uh-huh.
And they can look at some pictures there. There's also, I have another book out called Unwelcomed, which is the true story. It's like my perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has over 125 pictures in it.
Wonderful.
Of the writing and the things he did. I mean, it's, you know, if you were ever in Altaloma, California, you are welcome to come to my house. And I will show you everything and tell you the story again and show you things that are unbelievable.
Wow, it is truly unbelievable. I appreciate your time so much in telling us this incredible story. Deborah, besides the book that you have coming out now, is it out already? Or
yeah, it's been out for a while. It's Unwelcomed.
Okay.
You can get that on Amazon, but it's more of a documentary type. So it's not more of a, Joey's version was like a story. This is telling you just what happened, step by step.
And listeners can get that where?
On Amazon. Both books are available at Amazon.
Thank you for listening. I invite you to follow my other podcast, Mysterious Radio. Please share this show with others that are interested in the paranormal. I want to give a special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle.
who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Paranormal Fears.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.